Hi, thank you for joining us at U Inc. My name is Rhea Greif, and I'm here with you today as I am every week to help build the most important brand in your life, which is you. When we talk about building, we use tools, and the same goes for building our brand. These wellness tools will help elevate your emotional intelligence and help to develop a positive-minded outlook and have you better equipped for life and business. Some of these tools you will find helpful today, and some you'll put in the china cabinet for another time, depending on when you will need to break it out. This week's tool is generations, and why it is important to be aware of the generations in your life and at work, and in order to be able to communicate effectively across generations and to be able to be inclusive of all generations, which enhances productivity and problem solving at work and leads to the ability to connect with more people across the ages in life. Being able to understand generational culture is what I will demonstrate to you that you can do, and that being able to do so is a great tool for your brand. They only want you when you're 17. When you're 21, you're no fun. They take a bottle of wine and let you go. Say they'll let you know. So come on. They only want you when you're 17. When you're 21, you're no fun. Okay. Let's start with what I mean about generations. The common way to look at generations and cultures in which we grew up in is to say that they greatly influence our values, outlook, and approaches to work, problem solving, generally every aspect of life. While it is true that events influence our values and perhaps a region that we grew up in reflects a Western cultural orientation, more and more, due to the unlimited access to the world in all walks of life, this does not account for individual or culture of choice differences. Historically, we have labeled boomers and traditionalists or veterans as those that grew up during times which were relatively steady, predictable, and orderly. And historically, by contrast, the generations that followed, Gen Xers, Gen Y, Nexters, Millennials, or Echo Boomers, saw rapid and significant change, flexibility, and options. What I think is more valuable and is echoed in the sentiments of books such as Jennifer Deal's Retiring the Generation Gap, How Employees Young and Old Can Find Common Ground, is that, fundamentally, people want the same things no matter what generation they are from. And you can work with or manage people from all generations effectively, and that the so-called generation gap is, in large part, the result of miscommunication and misunderstanding fueled by common insecurities and the desire for clout, which includes control, power, authority, and position. In fact, in a recent research report by Achieve Global, they have found that many of the generational stereotypes in play today have little basis in science. It doesn't mean differences don't exist and that there aren't generation gaps, but it does support the call to treat people as individuals and make assessments and assignments from that perspective and decisions as to who can be our friends even. Stereotypes are generally based on some small kernel of truth or fact which can help us organize and process mountains of stimuli or information. But unfortunately, these stereotypes become so large and distorted as to become quite distant from reality. Generations are important to understand. The caution here is not to use them as a limitation to our understanding, but our appreciation of our understanding. That is the key. So let's take this to the next level. I have often stated that diversity in groups, both personal and at work, make for stronger teams. And I use the Mission Impossible example, where all members bring something unique to the group, and together they accomplish those impossible missions. So it behooves us to have friends, business associates from all age groups, whether real or perceived generations. Moreover, and this is another important point, we don't want to fall into the trap of what aging is supposed to look like for anyone, and especially us. For you. The book, We Have the Technology by Kara Platoni, looks at how senses can affect our mind processes. So, when we look at language, like the ravages of time, these linguistic cues lead to the inculcation of values about aging that may not be true anymore. There are countless examples of those thriving into their 90s and beyond. I've included articles with such folks as an inspiration, and you can find them on our webpage along with books mentioned on wcbe.org/programs/u-inc, as well as the podcast of our previous episodes. And you can also find the podcast on our sister media outlet, cityscenecolumbus.com. One such individual is Astrid Thonig, 100 years old, and works 40 hours a week at an insurance agency as a bookkeeper. I also think of personal examples of my mother, who is 68 and works full-time at the Cleveland Clinic in managing client accounts, and my father-in-law, 75 this year and still a full-time tax attorney with high-profile clients in Santa Monica. Even my husband Scott and I still go dancing, or what is referred to today as clubbing. Essentially, we can think of aging in the way that Barbara Bradley Haggerty, a 20-year NPR correspondent, approaches in her book, Life Reimagined. She interviewed neuroscientists, psychologists, biologists, geneticists, sociologists, and they all came up with the same conclusion that brains can even work more efficiently as we age, our bodies are capable of remarkable resilience, and relationships can continue to be satisfying. We don't have to continue thinking about generations of our lives and those of others in the ways of yore. We can renegotiate our purpose, refocus our energies, and transform the way we think about the world, ourselves, and others in life and work. Oh, and I'll leave you with this little gem. According to the most recent and longitudinal research, and you can find this in the book by Susan Krauss Whitborn called Search for Fulfillment, The Midlife Crisis is a Myth. Only 1 in 10 people actually experience one. Parents often talk about the younger generation as if they didn't have anything to do with it. And that is a quote by Haim Gnat, a pioneer in the techniques for conversing with children that are still taught today. People try to put us to down. Talking about my generation. Just because we get around. Talking about my generation. Artie Isaac is a skilled public speaker and helps people unlock their creativity through contemporary methods and old-fashioned encouragement. He is a leader of 3 groups for business owners and CEOs, 2 groups that are for key executives, and a 6th group is for trusted advisors for Vistage Worldwide. He takes time to coach individuals as well because, as Mr. Isaac puts it, he cares. He has taught personal creativity and innovation at The Ohio State University's Fisher College of Business. He also taught marketing, strategy, ethics, and creativity at the Columbus College of Art and Design. Artie is a writer and an actor. Artie Isaac has worked for more than 30 years with highly creative people addressing challenges and opportunities facing more than 1,000 companies and no doubt has tremendous experience in working with generations at work. Artie lives with his wife, Elisa, with whom he describes as smarter than him, and they live in Bexley, where they like to eat out together twice a week in places like Giuseppe's. Welcome, Artie Isaac.
Thank you, Rhea.
Artie, my first question is, where did you get those mad cheerleading skills?
You know, I think I came by it genetically. My uncle, Saul Morton Isaac, was the first cheerleader at the Columbus Academy. And I have a cousin, Clancy Isaac, who was the founder of Block O at Ohio State. I think that that may be the underlying talent of our family. And I would say that in some ways, when I look back on my life, and look at my life today, I am 2 things. I'm a cheerleader and I'm a writer, and I'm masquerading as everything else I appear to be. I really, this old-fashioned encouragement idea is really just cheerleading, and new methods are just forms of writing.
And if anyone has any doubt about that, please check out that video. It was pretty incredible.
Oh, yeah, that was a home game. The Academy let me speak to their upper school a few years ago. That was a lot of fun.
Yes. You basically have a blog on your website, youngisaac.typepad.com, where folks can go and find out more about your services as well. And one of the entries that I had read was your SMARTY goal setting. And I like the part of the why where you added towards making goals yours, because they have to be kind of authentic goals. And at one point you mentioned ageism. And since we're discussing generations, do you feel that there's such a thing in the workplace, both towards younger aged end of the continuum and the older age end of the continuum?
Do I believe there's something such as ageism? Well, I mean, if ageism is recognition of someone's age and experiencing some sort of implicit bias, then, well, yeah, sure, I believe that exists. I look at you, you look at me, we immediately draw some sort of conclusion about, well, I wonder how long this person has been on this planet. There are goods and, I guess, bads to any age. Whether or not we let our implicit biases get the better of us, or whether or not we acknowledge it and see if there's something to be learned. I think that's a trained skill generally. So, and if you're asking, are people discriminated against mm-hmm. because of their age? Yes, everyone is discriminated against because of his or her age. It depends on where they are that moment of the day and what age they are, but everyone at every age faces judgments against them, a prejudicial greeting of some sort.
Right. And that's kind of what you work on. And you train with a lot of corporate entities and you work on letting people know that companies like New Diversity, some of the stuff that we talked about earlier. Can you talk about some of the tips that you give to companies in that regard in terms of not discriminating and being inclusive of all people?
You know, I'm not an expert in diversity and inclusion. I'm studying it. I am about 5 years into a study of gender and race, and there are many other things to study. That's where I'm starting. I don't know that I have any direct advice for people, except that they're going to understand these opportunities and they're going to understand these challenges better if they understand other voices and other perspectives. Rather than teaching other people myself, I am more likely to hand them books. I've shared a lot of copies of Ta-Nehisi Coates' Between the World and Me, Rebecca Solnit's Men Explain Things to Me, and other books that I just feel like if you only hang with people that look like you, people that are roughly your age, people that do the same thing as you all day and drive the same direction morning and night, then you shouldn't be surprised if you start to live in a bubble and the world seem a little smaller.
Mm-hmm. Artie, are you a super ager?
No, I'm only 56. It's funny. I've been thinking about super aging and what that means. And you know, you described your friends and family that seem to absolutely embody that. I would like to retain my mental acuity for as long as possible. I think it's one of the fun things to play with. What did a friend of mine, David Harper, a Vistage chair in another world, another place, he said, the mind is a terrible place to go into alone, or a dangerous place. Mm-hmm. I hope to be a super ager, and I'm doing things I think that might lead to that.
Okay, and that's kind of what my follow-up question was going to be. And the article that you kind of posted about being a super ager discusses how critical brain regions can increase when people perform difficult tasks, whether it's physical or mental. So people, in essence, can keep them thick and healthy through vigorous exercise and bouts of strenuous mental effort. What are some of the things that you do that you mentioned that keep you challenged in those areas?
Well, about 5 years ago, I met somebody who was in my line of work, and at the time, he was 94 years old, and he was leading peer groups of business owners and CEOs. And he said to me, he said, you know, if you think it's golf, or you think it's retirement and sitting in a chair, or you think it's travel that's going to keep you young, he said, I really don't think so. I think in order to stay young and to keep the brain supple and plastic and retaining its strength. He said, there's nothing beats sitting with entrepreneurs and challenging their assumptions and asking them questions. I generally think that the thing I do that keeps my mind supple is what I do to keep it active. I mean, I spend almost all my day sitting with smart people and questioning everything they say. I don't give them answers. I'm not a consultant. I'm just deeply curious about what the other person is saying.
And what about the physical part of it?
I know I need to exercise a little more than I do. I don't drink much, you know, once in a while, but for me, alcohol is kind of like corned beef. It's monthly, not daily. I don't drink corned beef. I just want to make that clear, but it's not like corned beef in that way. Other things physically, you know, I don't know that it's any deeper than that. I guess I need to get up and stretch, and I do planks and core exercises. I have found out that if I have to change my clothes or go somewhere, I'm not going to do it if exercise is where I'm headed.
So there was an article written on you in 2012 where you stated that you take the Myers-Briggs every 8 years.
Yes.
Now, is this because you believe that you move into sort of another almost decade of your life, that your psychological preferences change, how you perceive the world changes as you get older?
Well, I was under the belief early on that we don't change. And so the first two times I did it, it was because I was with a group of people that was doing it. And so I went along with them. The third time, however, was shortly after I'd sold my advertising agency. And my same Myers-Briggs coach, Susan Shearer, phoned me and said, you know, we have to get together to review your results. And I said, great. And she said, you know, it's a big change. And I said, yeah, I'm sure it is. She said, what do you think is different? I said, I think I swung from a strong reading on the extroversion to a strong, dependable reading on introversion. And she said, well, let's talk about it. And that is what happened. Mm-hmm. I don't know that I changed. I think I've always been an introvert, though highly amplified. And I think where there are other changes in someone's use of their Myers-Briggs attributes, it's because they've over a lifetime at middle age, they've decided I'm going to try, you know, I'm left-handed. I think I'm going to try my right hand and see if I can do other things that might be more helpful. So we start to use our opposites as we age just because, I don't know, the old tools have only gotten us so far.
Mm-hmm. And actually in that book, Midlife Reimagined, what's about midlife basically is that it's not really midlife crisis, it's kind of a midlife checkpoint that people kind
Absolutely.
Of take a look. Right?
Yeah, it's an adjustment. For me, it has been the recognition that I'm closer to death than birth. I always was closer to birth. I mean, that's the way life was until it wasn't. And once I was closer to death, I...
Do you know how old you're going to be when you die?
No, but okay. I know how old I'm not going to live to. I mean, we can find a number we both agree on. No, I'm in good health, and I'm feeling quite lucky and blessed about that. But I can also do the math at 56. I don't think I think half life, my life has passed for sure. Anyway, what that has enabled me to do is stop trying to keep all my doors open. And for me, the midlife adjustment has been the picking of one door or two doors that form what is eventually my legacy. And with all the other doors snapping shut, I used to fear that. And now I find great relief in not trying to prop open all those other doors.
I actually like that quite a bit. So speaking of advancing in years in general, you and your wife have been married for 20 plus years?
28 years.
28 years. Congratulations.
Wow, the first 28 are the hard ones.
Okay. In the book that we mentioned, Life Reimagined by Barbara Haggerty, it discusses the challenges that marriages face as couples spend more time together, people become overly familiar, relationships morph and cool and deepen in other ways too. You even had this funny post that you had written about being a vegetarian in the meat market. If anyone wants to read about that, they should really check it out. What would be something that you would say keeps the two of you firmly connected as you go through those generations?
Gosh, Elisa has very low needs. Expectations are very reasonable. And so I haven't had to do much more than behave and show up and attend. But I guess I would say this, that couples either grow together or they grow apart. There's no such thing except in geometry of the philosophy of parallel lines. We're always at all times growing apart or together. Steve Anderson from Integrated Leadership Systems was one of my first coaches. He was my first coach. And he said, every day you need to take a walk holding hands. Mm. This isn't deep or difficult, but if we don't do that, if we don't have a cup of tea together once a day, or if I'm not home for dinner, we really do have to ask ourselves, are we growing together or are we growing apart? You know, atomically, there's no atom in your body, I'm told, that's more than 7 years old, which means that since we've been married 28 years, I've actually been married to four women. she hasn't, you know, morphed all at once. That would be traumatic. But
or interesting.
Yes, right. And so I think I have to always be aware that she is in many ways the young woman I married, and in many ways she's a completely different person, and I have to be respectful and interested, and I am fascinated in her growth.
So you and I have some things in common. We both kind of do working with corporates and keeping them well in some way, whichever way that is, whether that's through creativity. And we both act, and I only juggle a little bit. I don't know how accomplished of a juggler you are, but, you know, I'm looking at you now. You're clearly a creative, although our listeners can't see. You have a wonderful fedora here with a yellow feather in it. It's very, very nice. Would you say that keeping kind of the left brain and the right brain active is important towards maintaining relevance and vitality and perhaps being able to have that and bring that to work and to the people that you're working with?
Can I just say yes?
Okay.
That was a yes or no. I'd say yes.
Okay. And then how do you take that and translate that into some of the work that you're doing?
You know, I never can tell my left brain from my right, can't quite see them. If we're talking about how do we make sure that we keep our executive function strong by making good decisions, by time management, by keeping our environment neat and orderly. I do think that's important. And what I use for that is David Allen's masterpiece, Getting Things Done. Great book, a book you don't read, it's a book you do. Mm-hmm. And that helps my, let me see if I can get this right, my left brain stay neat and tidy. Mm-hmm. I am always where I need to be on time unless something very strange has happened. I don't like to run late, and I don't ever think I need to. I hand in my work a day or an hour before it's promised. I don't work on deadline. I'm not fond of that. Except when my right brain takes over and wants to work on deadline. I allow that. The way my right brain works and the way it translates in my life is that I only write and I only do other creative things when I want to. I don't schedule them. I am unable to write on command. On the other hand, I'm unable to sleep when I want to write. And so I often get up at 1 or 2 or 3 in the morning and write for a couple of hours or think for a couple of hours, do something for a couple of hours. I'll send email and people will write me back and say, why are you up at this hour? And I always think, who are you to ask me such a ridiculous question? I'm 56 years old. Am I not allowed to be up in the night writing if that's what I like? So for me, and I think this deals with generations. I think that some of what I'm describing, whether it's exercise on bumping into a dumbbell for 5 minutes in the middle of an otherwise irrelevant task, or whether it's writing in the middle of the night, I think from what, you know, our generational stereotypes teach us, our millennial aspects, a blended life, always doing everything all the same time. There's no boundaries. There's no balance because there are no lines between work and play and workout and health and the mind. I think that in many ways, either I came to it naturally or I've admired and adopted the traits of my children.
And where could people go if they wanted to kind of utilize your services? Where would they find you? What kind of services can they get from Artie Isaac?
Well, at artie.co, they can find my writing on ethics and creativity. There's a toolbox there of stuff they can use. Everything's free. I don't charge for my intellectual property.
That's great.
On the web. I sort of feel like, as my teacher Sri Kumar Rao says, the more people using this stuff, the better off we all are.
Yep.
If people go to artieisaac.com, it's more of a professional website, and it describes my work with peer groups and my work in coaching. I'm not presently taking individual coaching clients, though I do meet with my Vistage members. But people and there are creativity workshops that I lead from time to time that people can look at. You know, if they I guess send me an email at artieisaac@gmail.com, I put them on a list and let them know when I'm speaking somewhere locally. I'd be happy to do that.
And can you tell us a little bit more about what Vistage is?
Sure. Vistage is a worldwide organization, 16 countries, 21,000 members. The members are all people who run businesses, either owning them or running them for others or advisors to those businesses. They're the people who really are the backbone of this economy. You know, we live in a time where the words CEO are denigrated, maybe with cause because of the actions of many. But most of the people who run businesses, most of the people who are CEOs are, you know, they're living here in Ohio. They've got somewhere between 10 and 500 employees, and they're really deeply caring about doing the right thing. That's what I'm running into. I'm sure there's some pirates out there. But so at Vistage it gets them together in groups of 12 to 18 people. They get together for a full day, and they challenge each other's assumptions. They try to help each other find their blind spots. They put issues or opportunities on the table. People ask questions. It's very invasive. It's very caring. This is a group of people who, you know, generally is in a life where people don't ever question them. Or if people give them advice, the advice has all sorts of agenda attached. Maybe the agenda is that when Elisa gives me advice, there's an agenda. The agenda is she loves me. It's a wonderful agenda, but it's an agenda. These group meetings are more like strangers on a train, and they're simply going to say, here's what I think you're missing. What do you think I'm missing? And what they do is they spend a lot of time coming together a day a month to have their answers questioned.
And do you see that CEOs might struggle with generations at work ever?
The greatest misconception in our lives is that we are normal, each of us. And so in the raising of our children, I tried like crazy to teach them how to be baby boomers. And, you know, that creates a downright unsafe environment. What was I thinking? Well, I wasn't thinking. I was figuring I was normal, and they would be well served to know what I know. And I think that the same thing is true in the workplace. We presume that what a millennial wants is what a baby boomer wants, mm-hmm. and they're very different. So, you know, baby boomers generally, again, these are stereotypes,
right.
but generally, we as baby boomers, I'm a late baby boomer, you know, we like putting in the hours. I mean, we're the people who talk so much about hourly wage, and we seem to think that's really important, but that, you know, that won't last through the hourly wage is not going to last through the millennials once they're in charge mm-hmm. and writing the legislation. We you know, we like trophies. We like rising through a hierarchy. We like loyalty.
And by contrast, millennials?
Millennials like learning. They like developing a toolbox of skills. They like working with their best friends, not just with friends at work. They like working on their terms and on their hours, and they very much like getting it done. They care more about getting it done than being seen getting it done. They find that baby boomer attribute to be, and I think they're right, mindless and a little bit sad. Much of my learning comes from a writer named Gustavo Gradnitsky, who wrote a book called Culture Trumps Everything.
And hopefully you'll let us have some of those books and put them on the website so people can take
Love
a
to.
Look at them. Great.
Sure.
And then, if you know, where do Gen Xers fit in the middle of all this? I've heard people say they kind of straddle in between the two.
The challenge with Gen Xers is that their time as the dominant force in the market, in the job market, came and went so quickly. Boomers, you know, had decades of domination, and millennials will have a long time, 15 years anyway. I think Gen Xers were the largest group in the workforce for two or maybe 3 years. They bring us this idea of balance. They bring us this idea of doing the right thing at the right time and making sure that their lives are not overwhelmed by the lack of activity or too much work or too much, I guess, too much play. But I think that'll get swept out really fast. Mm-hmm. It's an appealing thing to hear, but you can't beat millennials for their sheer numbers, and you can't beat millennials, I don't think, for their awareness of why even decide what is work and what is play, or what is for profit and what is not for profit, or what is giving and what is receiving. Millennials don't draw goofy lines like that. They're the first generation without borders, without boundaries. Boy, I love the traits I see in me that look like, you know, I might be a little bit millennial.
So, Artie, I have a question. It's kind of off topic, but Larry Smith asked me from Six Word Memoirs. He asked me to ask you this question, and I know the story, so maybe you care to share or not. Tell us the story about the blue suit.
So I'm wearing this blue suit, which was this electric blue suit. I'd worn it routinely to this one arts organization, Available Light Theater. I'd worn this to all their fundraisers and big galas. And a young person came up to me, a junior in high school, the son of an acting friend of mine, and he said, "Oh, I just love that suit." And I immediately just took off the jacket and I said, "Let's try it on." And we tried it on him and it fit. And I said, "Let me send you the pants." If Larry remembers me taking off my pants right then and there, we're talking about Larry's fantasies, and we don't have time for that on the radio. You know, if somebody wants a suit that you can't fit into, it's in everyone's best interest to get it to them.
And I'm sure that was a remarkable moment, obviously, because Larry mentioned it. Well, you may not have the electric blue suit, but you certainly carry this electric personality. And I'm very grateful that you came here today to share it with our
Thank
listeners.
You,
Thank you, Artie.
Thank you.
A word from our person on the street.
So, Denny, tell me what your thoughts are on generations.
Well, today I'm at the Women's March, and I know that a couple of years ago that there was the same parade for civil rights with Martin Luther King. And I think the generations stick up for each other, and I'm glad that I got to experience this parade.
So you feel good about what you did today for your generation?
Yes.
Congratulations. Thank you.
And that's our show for today, folks. Thanks so much for joining me. I'm Maria Greif, and you've been listening to You, Inc. on 90.5 WCBE.